Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Courier for Thursday, May 25th. And I am your narrator, Peter Welch, and you are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Information Services Network for the Blind and the Disabled. And let's take a look here at the front page of the paper and see what all is going on. We've got lots of news here. Tax breaks for seniors creates big headaches. New laws fuels fraud, concerns, and confusion. A rush to enact new property tax breaks for Iowa seniors has led to confusion and concerns of fraud among county and city assessors who say that they are struggling to verify applicants' age. Iowa seniors can begin applying for a new property tax break created by legislation signed into law 3 weeks ago by Governor Kim Reynolds. The new property tax law, House File 718, was approved with near unanimous support in the Iowa legislature during the last stage of the legislative session. The law took effect immediately and provides a $3,250 exemption on the taxable value of a home owned and lived in by Iowans age 65 and older. The exemption applies for the assessment that began on January 1st that would have associated taxes due in the fall of 2024 and spring of 2025. The homestead property exemption then increases to $6,500 for the 2024 assessment year. In order to claim the new tax exemption, seniors must file applications with their local assessor offices on or before the 1st of July. The Iowa Department of Revenue last week amended an existing homestead tax credit exemption form to allow seniors to also apply for the new exemption. To claim the new exemption, applicants must provide their date of birth and certify information on the form is correct. However, ambiguity in guidance provided by the Revenue Department, as well as the quick timeline for implementation, has caused confusion and consternation among assessors over what documents they can request and examine from Iowans to verify they're 65 or older and qualify for the tax break, said Linn County Assessor Jerry Witt. Witt said that his office has been inundated with calls, emails, and letters, and in-person questions from seniors about the new property taxes exemption. The media has been doing a good job of getting the word out, and we're doing what we can to try to simplify the process, Witt goes on to say. It doesn't seem to be going the best so far. Witt said that his office was given permission by the Department of Revenue to automatically approve Iowa seniors currently receiving the homestead tax credit to also receive the new exemption, so long as they can verify that they're 65 or older. However, Department of Revenue Deputy Administrator John Wolf, in a memo to assessors and auditors responding to questions, wrote that they are not allowed to require any additional documentation not on the form to verify age eligibility. Additionally, several of you have inquired about requiring additional documentation to verify age eligibility, such as a driver's license, Wolf wrote. You're not allowed to require any additional documentation that is not requested on the form. The homestead form does not require any additional documentation, nor does Chapter 425, Subchapter 1, require additional documentation. Witt, the Linn County Assessor, and others interpreted that to mean that they were prohibited from verifying an applicant's age, sparking concerns that many younger Iowans who do not qualify will take advantage of it. A spokesperson for the Department of Resources clarified Wednesday that assessors can ask for a photo ID, but cannot reject an application if one was not provided. Additionally, the Iowa Secretary of State recently issued an opinion stating that assessors may use voter registration lists to determine the age of property owners qualifying for the new exemption. The assessor can use other available data to verify age, and there is nothing preventing the assessor from examining a document such as a driver's license, said Department of Revenue spokesman John Fuller. They just cannot recommend disallowance or refuse to accept a claim because the claimant doesn't provide additional documentation not required by law. Fuller said that documentation requirements to establish age eligibility for the new homestead exemption are consistent with other property tax credit programs that have been in operation for years. He gave the example of the Elderly Credit Homestead Program, which has age-based eligibility requirements and requires an attestation to establish age eligibility. Well, that's really something. That's very important for our senior citizens. Okay, what else is going on in the paper here today? There's a photo here. The Summer Fire Department works to extinguish a fully engulfed barn on the 4th of January. Area fire departments not short of volunteers. Local staffing bucks U.S. trend of departments struggling to fill positions. In Cedar Falls, across the nation, volunteer fire departments are struggling. But that doesn't seem to be the case in Northeast Iowa. The Associated Press reported that there are many reasons volunteer departments, which make up more than 80% of all fire departments in the U.S., are seeing issues. Young people leaving rural areas, which are more likely to rely on volunteer services, extensive training requirements that are time-consuming, and the fact that many of these volunteer departments are expected to respond to medical emergencies, hazard incidences, active shooter situations, and other scenarios that result in increased call volumes are a few examples. In 1984, there were nearly 900,000 volunteer firefighters, according to the AP. In 2020, that number was 677,000 over that same time frame. However, call numbers tripled. In the summer, the fire department has retained an average of 30 to 35 firefighters, even throughout the pandemic. Keegan Dukoff, the assistant fire chief in summer, said that most of the crew has been around for more than 25 years. He said that the department's most tenured firefighter will reach 55 years of service this year. Once those firefighters hit 30 or more years volunteering, they will probably think about retiring, Dukoff says. Then we'll have a pretty big spot that needs to be filled, he says. I can see us maybe struggling in the future, but we're definitely noticing people willing to volunteer. The same goes for Waverly's volunteer fire department, also sitting at 30 to 35 firefighters. Fire Chief Brian McKenzie said that his department is older, most of the crew being over 30 years old. We have a lot of good, dedicated people, McKenzie said. We have a lot of tenured guys, but when we get someone on, they stay on. According to the Iowa Fire Department Census, almost 90% of Iowa's fire departments are volunteer. Tier run. Dukoff also said that for rural areas like Sumner, which has a little more than 2,000 people according to the 2020 census, the call volume is lower, so it doesn't make sense for a city or township to fund a paid department. The Associated Press said time donated by volunteer firefighters saves communities nearly $47 billion each year nationwide. But running a volunteer fire department still costs money. Dukoff said that outfitting one firefighter with proper personal protective equipment required to enter a burning home costs $14,100. That includes the helmet, the hood, the gloves, the bunker coat, bunker pants, boots, mask, breathing apparatus. It does not include the price for hand tools. Pagers to alert the firefighters also cost about $500. The Sumner Fire Department is funded primarily through donations, he said, and is blessed to have citizens that do support it. The department also receives support from applying for grants. In Waverly, McKenzie said that the city sets a budget and treats the department very well. But if it wants anything extra, there is money that can be used from the Volunteer Fire Association. Deere reports $2.9 billion income in the second quarter. In Moline, Illinois, John Deere is off to a multi-billion dollar start for the first two quarters of its fiscal year, showing growing income from last year's numbers. Deere and Company reported net income of $2.86 billion for the second quarter of $9.65 per share on Friday. Last year at this time, the company reported a net income of $2.98 billion or $6.81 per share. For the first 6 months of its 2023 fiscal year, net income attributable to Deere & Company was $4.819 billion or $16.18 per share. That is up more than $1.8 billion from last year at this time, when the company reported $3.001 billion or $9.72 per share over 6 months. Worldwide net sales and revenues increased 30% to $17.387 billion for the second quarter of FY23 and rose to $30.038, an increase of 31% for the first two quarters combined. All right, what else do we have here? Zolendek shares ideas about Cedar Falls fire chief job. Internal candidate, one of two finalists for the position. In Cedar Falls, John Zolendek is not the most senior member of the city's fire squad, but he's a finalist for the fire chief job, Zolendek told seven people gathered for a public meet and greet Tuesday at the Public Safety Center that he brings to the table a host of fresh ideas and ambitious goals. If chosen over the other finalist, Chris Lediker from Kansas, who met with community Monday, he'd be the successor to retired Chief John Bostwick. He's been serving as interim chief since October and already has brought one of his ideas to fruition, CPR/AED training, the first Sunday of every month. Another of his priorities is securing funding and constructing a city training facility with the help of a grant. Not too long ago, I would have never applied for the job, but some of the senior leaders encouraged me, he said. While serving in the interim, I learned that there are a lot of ways the department could benefit from a fresh look, new programs, or different things. Also, just quickly, I want to tell you the weather today. It's going to be mostly sunny again, a high of 77 and a low of 46. That's great sleeping weather, a low of 46 tonight. Now, here's a story about someone who you probably know quite well or very well, someone who has passed, superstar Turner, dead at 83. In New York, Tina Turner, the unstoppable singer and stage performer who teamed with her husband, Ike Turner, for a dynamic run of hit records and live shows in the 60s and 70s and survived her horrifying marriage to triumph in middle age with the chart-topping What's Love Got to Do with It, has passed at the age of 83. Turner died Tuesday after a long-term illness in her home near Zurich, Switzerland, according to her manager, and she became a Swiss citizen a decade ago. Few stars traveled so far. She was born Anna Mae Bullock in a segregated Tennessee hospital and spent her latter years on a 260,000-square-foot estate on Lake Zurich and overcame so much. Physically battered, emotionally devastated, financially ruined by her 20-year relationship with Ike Turner, she became a superstar on her own in her 40s, at a time when most of her peers were on their way down and remained a top concert draw for years after. With admirers ranging from Beyoncé to Mick Jagger, Turner was one of the world's most successful entertainers. Known for a core of pop, rock, rhythm, and blues favorites, Proud Mary, Nutbush City Limits, River Deep, Mountain High, and the hits that she had in the 80s, among them What's Love Got to Do with It, We Don't Need Another Hero, and a cover of Al Green's Let's Stay Together. Her trademarks were her growling contralto, her bold smile and strong cheekbones, her palette of wigs and the muscular, quick-stepping legs that she did not shy from showing off. She sold more than 150 million records worldwide, won 12 Grammys, was voted along with Ike into the Rock Hall of Fame in 1991, and was on her own in 2021, and was honored at the Kennedy Center in 2005. Her life became the basis for the film What's Love Got to Do with It in 1993, a Broadway musical, and an HBO documentary in 2021 that she called her public farewell. Until she left her husband and revealed their backstory, she was known as the voracious onstage foil of the steady-going Ike, the steady lady of the Ike and Tina Turner Review. Ike was billed first and ran the show, choosing the material, the arrangements, the backing singers. They toured constantly for years, in part because Ike was often short on money and unwilling to miss a concert. Tina Turner was forced to go on with bronchitis, with pneumonia, with a collapsed right lung at one point. So, what an amazing performer. She will certainly be missed. That is for most definitely sure. Okay, let's get on now to the Cedar Valley section of the paper. Man appears in court for attacks. Waterloo Cedar Falls victim threatened with knife prior to sexual assault. In Waterloo, a North Liberty man allegedly threatened women with a knife before sexually assaulting them in two apartment break-ins this spring, according to a recently released court records. Asante Ajay Walker Garcia Adams, age 25, who also lived in Iowa City and Coraville, made his initial court appearance on Wednesday on charges of sexual assault and burglary in attacks near college campuses in Cedar Falls and Waterloo. In court, Adams asked the judge about the ramification of the charges. With these allegations, if I'm convicted, I can never leave the country, correct? Adams asked. He also said that his phone had been seized by police and asked for a clarification as how much prison time he was facing. County Attorney Brian Williams said that the charges, if run consecutively, carry up to 100 years in prison with at least 35 years before parole consideration because of mandatory minimums. It also requires lifetime sex offender registration. Bond was set at $400,000 cash only, and Adams will be under supervision, if released, pending trial. The court also entered orders prohibiting Adams from contacting the victims. Court records allege that Adams brandished a knife in both attacks. In the Waterloo incident, the victim said that she awoke around 5 a.m. on March 10th to find a stranger on top of her. The intruder claimed he was holding a knife to her child's neck and would cut him if she yelled for help. He put a pillowcase over her head and led her to a couch where he sexually assaulted her, court records state. In the April 10th attack in Cedar Falls, a woman said that she woke to a man on top of her with his hand around her neck. He threatened her with a knife, covered her face, and sexually assaulted her, court records go on to state. It wasn't until last week that Adams was identified as a suspect, and police said that DNA testing linked him to the Waterloo and Cedar Fall crimes. Veterans honored on Memorial Day. That's right. Hey, Memorial Day weekend is rapidly approaching here, folks. Well, let's hope it's going to be a good one. The weather looks good. Events on leading up to holiday remember those who have died in war. Memorial Day weekend observances are planned in the metro area. We need to honor all veterans, past and present. We have a long history, and Memorial Day was set aside to honor our war dead, said Dave Grimm, adjutant treasurer of Disabled American Veterans Chapter 11, noting that the day should have a deeper meaning than a three-day weekend, day off from work, or a day to spend fishing or grilling. On Saturday, Rolling Thunder, Iowa Chapter 1 will host a POW/MIA awareness ceremony at 3:30 p.m. at the Veterans Memorial Hall in Soldiers and Sailors Park, 1915 Corbett Court in downtown Waterloo. A car show and fundraiser will precede the ceremony. Presented by Midwest Grease King Car Club, The car show takes place from noon to 4 p.m. between 4th and 5th Streets. The public can select the best car for a dollar for each vote. Donations will benefit Rolling Thunder Iowa Chapter 1 for POW/MIA awareness and local veterans needs. The winner will be announced at the 3:30 p.m. program. Volunteers spent Thursday placing flags on veterans' graves at Gardens of Memory Cemetery, where 4,798 veterans are interned. Two shifts were required to place the flags. On Wednesday, volunteers are needed at the cemetery again to remove the flags from the graves. To participate, email, and I'll spell this out to you, LENTGERJAMES@gmail.com or YLOVELESS@blackhawkcounty.iowa.gov. Or you can also call area code 319-287-9463. That number again, 319-287-9463. In Cedar Falls, the city of Cedar Falls reminds the public about decorating ordinances for area cemeteries with Memorial Day weekend approaching. Families and friends may honor holidays by decorating gravestones. However, the city staff does have to preserve the area to help accommodate all citizens that use the facility. So, in order to keep the cemeteries maintained, the city ordinance mandates that those who decorate gravestones abide by the following guidelines. And here they are. Temporary placements at gravesites must be removed in a timely fashion after the holiday weekend so that the staff can maintain grass growth throughout the cemetery. Residents have 3 days after the holiday to remove any temporary items. A temporary placement is one that is not in an urn or attached to the monument foundation. Flower bouquets and additional mementos, such as figurines or flags that are not affixed to the gravestone, are considered temporary. Shepherd hooks are allowed at gravesites, but must be drilled into the monument base if they are intended as a permanent fixture. For safety purposes, no glass bottles are allowed upon a gravesite. No artificial flowers, wire structures, or other urns shall be placed directly into the ground at a gravesite. For additional questions regarding gravestone decorations, you may email Chase Schrage, that's S-C-H-R-A-G-E, Cedar Falls Public Works Director, at chase.schrage@cedarfalls.com. Diving board suit back on deck after appeal. In Cedar Falls, a lawsuit over an alleged slippery diving board at the Cedar Falls Municipal Pool may resurface following a ruling by the Iowa Court of Appeals. Ron Mayers of Waverly took the city of Cedar Falls to court after he slipped on the 16-foot diving board at the Falls Aquatic Center in July of 2019. A district court judge sunk the lawsuit when the city argued it was protected through qualified immunity. Myers' attorneys appealed, arguing that qualified immunity didn't apply because the slippery diving board was a crime. Iowa's public health code mandates that diving boards and platforms have a slip-resistance surface. And another part of Iowa code dictates that violations of the state's health code are misdemeanor crimes. Governments can't play the qualified immunity card if a crime is involved under Iowa code. The city countered, arguing that it installed the slip-resistant board in 2013 and that the code doesn't define how much slip resistance must be maintained to be in compliance. And regular pool inspections by the Blackhawk County Health Department never resulted in warnings or citations about the diving board being slip-prone, the city noted. The Iowa Court of Appeals disagreed in a 7-page ruling issued on Wednesday. The fact that there is no articulated level of slip resistance that must be maintained does not change the plain language of the rule. The diving board must have a slip resistant surface. Either the board had a slip-resistant surface or it didn't, said the ruling written by Judge Paul Ehlers. Whether or not the board was slip-resistant would be a matter for trial, the opinion states. Okay, let's take a look here and see what else we got going on here today in the paper. DeSantis joins crowded Iowa presidential contest. Oh my goodness, and it is getting crowded, isn't it? In Des Moines, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis announced his campaign for president Wednesday, jumping into an already crowded presidential primary as he seeks to sway Iowa voters ahead of the 2024 caucuses. DeSantis poses the most significant challenge to former President Donald Trump, who leads Republican primary polling nationally and in Iowa. But his entry comes after half a dozen other Republicans have entered the race, fracturing the party's anti-Trump bloc and making it more difficult to mount a successful challenge to the former president, said veteran Republican strategist Eric Woolson. There was all this sense that he and Trump were going to be the two 800-pound gorillas in the race, said Woolson, who has worked on presidential campaigns but is unaffiliated this cycle. And maybe that still happens, but at this point, the Trump campaign has done a very solid job of neutralizing any advantages that Governor DeSantis has. And in the meantime, he had some missteps that have slowed his momentum considerably. South Carolina Senator Tim Scott, who announced his candidacy this week, joining former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley of Arkansas, Governor Asa Hutchinson, biotech entrepreneur Vivek Ramaswamy, and other Republican hopefuls that have been frequent guests in Iowa over the last several months. DeSantis paired a campaign video launch with a conversation on Twitter Spaces with the site's billionaire owner Elon Musk, which was delayed close to 30 minutes because of technology issues. The space and the app repeatedly crashed as more than 500,000 people attempted to listen to the conversation. Once the live stream was relaunched, DeSantis pitched his vision for the country, challenging President Joe Biden for bowing to the woke mob and painting an image of chaos at the southern border and crime in cities. He pointed to his achievements in Florida, citing a low crime rate, low taxes, high marks in education, and a quickly increasing population. He did not mention Trump by name. My pledge to you is this. If you nominate me, you can set your clock to January 20th, 2025, at high noon, he said, because on the west side of the U.S. Capitol, I will be taking the oath of office as the 47th president of the United States. No excuses. I will get the job done. Pence criticizes transgender student policy in Iowa. Stop. In Des Moines, flanked by Iowans involved in conservative education movements and the state's attorney general, Mike Pence, former VP and potential 2024 Republican presidential candidate, once again levied heavy criticism on an Eastern Iowa school district's policy for transgender students. During a discussion about parents' rights in education over lunch at an East Village hotel, Pence called the policies at the Lindmar Community School District crazy and mislabeled them as a gender transition plan. If a school in the heartland of America where a student would have to come in with a permission slip from their parents to get a Tylenol from the school nurse, but could get a gender transition plan without ever notifying their parents, as I said then, and I'll say it again, that's not bad policy, that's crazy, Pence said. Gender transition is the process of changing one's gender identity and can include medical treatments and surgeries. The Lindmar policy allows students in the seventh grade or above to request a gender support plan that calls for teachers and peers to address the student by a new name and new pronouns. The policy leaves it up to the students whether to notify parents. The event was hosted by Advancing American Freedom, a nonprofit issue advocacy organization launched by Pence in 2021. The organization filed a legal brief joining a lawsuit against the Lindmar policy. All right. Well, we are coming up to the half hour of the broadcast here. And again, I would like to remind you, this is Peter Welch. I am your narrator here today, reading the Courier for Thursday, the 25th of May. And you are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Information Services Network for the Blind and the Disabled. And we do, I'm looking here as I'm talking to you, we have just a couple, or let's see, one, two, three obituary news pieces here. Let's take a look at them. William Patrick James has passed peacefully in his home in West Des Moines at the age of 89. A funeral mass of Christian burial will be celebrated on Friday, the 26th of May at 11 a.m. at Sacred Heart Catholic Church, which is at 1627 Grand Avenue, West Des Moines, with luncheon following, burial following at Hopeville Cemetery at 2:30 p.m. Visitation will be held on Thursday, May 25th from 6 to 8 p.m. with a rosary, concluding the visitation both at Caldwell Parish Funeral Home at 8201 Hickman Avenue in Urbandale. In lieu of flowers, donations to Hopeville Community Church are preferred. Online condolences may be left at www.caldwellparish.com. Okay, let's see what else we have here. Dorothy Matthews. Dorothy Matthews passed at the age of 97 in Urbandale, and per her request, cremation rites have been accorded and no services are planned. Dot was born in Cedar Falls in 1925. And finally, Marilyn Bader of Scottsdale, Arizona, has passed at the age of 92 her group home residence in April 9th of 2023. And let's see here. I'm just reading this very quickly. No date has been set for a memorial service, and donations can be made to the Heard Museum. All right, let's keep moving on here. Let's take a look very quickly at Metro Briefs. United Way hosts golf tourney. In Waterloo, the Cedar Valley United Way will host its 17th annual golf classic on the 16th of June at South Hills Golf Course at 1830 East Shawless Road. The event, presented by Shields, will help raise the first dollars of the 2023 Cedar Valley United Way campaign. Teams of four will play 18 holes with an 8-inch cup best shot. First, second, and third place winners of each flight will win prizes of golf bags, clubs, balls, and apparel. Additional hole events will be available for longest drive, closest to the pin, longest putt, and canoe do it. Team registration begins at 10 a.m. with a shotgun start at noon. And legislative forum to be held in Waterloo. A legislative public forum will be held from 4:30 to 6 p.m. on Wednesday. It will take place at the Hawkeye Community College Van G. Miller Adult Learning Center, and they're located at 120 Jefferson Street. Police probe reports of gunfire overnight in Waterloo. Police are investigating an overnight shooting that damaged two homes and a parked vehicle late Tuesday. No injuries were reported and no arrests have been made as of yet. Neighbors called police about 8:25 p.m. to report gunfire on Logan Avenue. Police found a home at 859 Logan had been struck twice by bullets. Witnesses reported suspects had fled to 1017 Logan Avenue, according to the police. Officers searched the home and found a 9mm ammunition and magazine, but no firearms, police said. Then at 10:31 p.m., police were called to a report of shots fired. They found a house at 2925 Dell Drive and a parked Ford Explorer had been hit by gunfire. It wasn't clear if the shootings were related. Presidential hopeful in Cedar Falls Friday. In Cedar Falls, Republican candidate for president Vivek Ramaswamy will be at an event in Cedar Falls on Friday. The first event is an 8 a.m. meet and greet at Barn Happy at 11310 University Avenue, hosted by former State Representative Walt Rogers and the Black Hawk County Republicans, and it will include a pancake breakfast. At 11:30 a.m., Ramsey Whammy will lead a Waterloo Cedar Falls Business Roundtable at Mud Advertising at 915 Technology Parkway. He'll be back at Mud Advertising at 4 p.m. for a meet-and-greet event. All right, let's move on now to the Nation and the World section of the paper. Debt limits and negotiations. Sides remain far apart. McCarthy defiant says, it's not my fault. U.S. heading for a crisis. In Washington, a defiant House Speaker, Kevin McCarthy, said Wednesday, the debt ceiling standoff was not my fault, as he sent Republican negotiators to the White House to finish out talks, but warned the two sides need more time as they try to reach a budget deal with President Joe Biden. McCarthy said that he remained optimistic that they could reach an agreement before a deadline as soon as next week, when the Treasury Department could run out of cash to pay its bills. Financial markets are teetering as Washington edges closer to a debt default crisis that would be unprecedented in modern times, sending shockwaves around the globe. The White House blamed the Republicans led by McCarthy for risking a devastating default that would hit every single part of the country, as they demand extreme spending cuts that would hurt millions of Americans. We're not going to default, McCarthy, Republican of California, assured. The Republican speaker said that the negotiators made some progress at the White House. I want to work as hard as we can and not stop. Debt ceiling negotiations are locked on a classic problem that has divided and disrupted Washington before, particularly the last time Republicans used the borrowing limit as leverage to extract priorities a decade ago. Republicans want to roll back federal government spending, while Biden and other Democrats do not. From the White House, Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre decried what the administration called a manufactured crisis, set in motion by Republicans pushing extreme proposals that would hurt every single part of the country, whether you're in a red state or a blue state. Time is short to strike a deal. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen said on Wednesday that it seems almost certain that the United States would not make it past early June without defaulting. That would be catastrophic, as the government risks running out of cash to pay its bills as soon as June 1st. While Biden has ruled out, for now, invoking the 14th Amendment to raise the debt limit on his own, Democrats in the House announced that they have all signed on to a legislative discharge process that would force a debt ceiling vote. But they need five Republicans to break with their party and tip the majority to set the plan forward. Sign the bill, Democrats yelled on the House floor after the Republican majority leader announced lawmakers could keep plans to recess on Thursday, but could be called back for votes. Well, my goodness, isn't that something? Okay, let's look at now some news digests here. House GOP moves to block loan plan. In Washington, House Republicans passed a resolution Wednesday that would overturn President Joe Biden's student loan cancellation plan, but the White House vowed to veto it, and plan remains on hold as the Supreme Court considers its fate. It adds to the GOP's ongoing attack on Biden's one-time student loan cancellation, halted in November in response to lawsuits from conservative opponents. The Supreme Court is now weighing the plan after hearing arguments in February. A decision is expected in the coming weeks. Biden's plan would cancel up to $20,000 in federal student loans for 43 million Americans. About 26 million had applied for the relief before courts intervened. Biden speaks on Uvalde anniversary in Washington as families and loved ones mourned the unimaginable loss of 19 children and two teachers shot dead last year in Uvalde, Texas. President Joe Biden said with a solemn White House Memorial Wednesday that too many schools and too many everyday places have become killing fields. The town planned a private ceremony and candlelight vigil in the evening, and the Texas legislature paused for a few moments of silence at 11:30 a.m. CDT, the moment the shooter entered Robb Elementary School last year, touching off the nation's deadliest school shooting in a decade. Biden delivered remarks in front of a display with 21 candles, one for each victim. All the students killed were between the ages of 9 and 11 years of age. The killings, along with another mass shooting in Buffalo, New York, prompted the most significant gun safety law in decades. Briefly, Joint Chiefs President Joe Biden will announce Thursday that he is tapping Air Force General C.Q. Brown Jr. to serve as chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, according to a senior U.S. official. Brown, a history-making Air Force fighter pilot with years of experience in shaping U.S. defenses to meet China's rise, would replace Army General Mark Milley. Robocalls. Attorneys general across the U.S. joined in a lawsuit against a telecommunications company accused of making more than 7.5 billion robocalls to people on the national Do Not Call registry. The lawsuit said that Avid Telecom used spoofed or invalid caller ID numbers, including more than 8.4 million calls that appeared to be coming from government and law enforcement agencies. Judiciary. A federal prosecutor tapped by President Joe Biden to become a U.S. district judge in Kansas withdrew from consideration, citing the nearly two-year wait for action on his nomination. Jabari Womble is Biden's second judicial nominee to withdraw this month. Probe, a Republican-led investigation on Wednesday, accused Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton of committing multiple crimes in office, including felonies. Investigators alleged Paxton sought to hide an affair, misused his office to help a donor, and skirted protocols grossly outside norms. Sudan. Fighting between Sudan's military and a powerful parliamentary force displaced more than 1.3 million people, the UN Migration Agency said on Wednesday. The conflict has killed at least 863 civilians, including at least 190 children, and wounded over 3,530 others. Vote maps. A North Carolina redistricting ruling has set up a possible electoral windfall for congressional Republicans in preserving their U.S. House majority next year. While Democrats only need to flip 5 GOP seats overall to regain control, experts say that the state Supreme Court decision means that 4 Democratic incumbents in the state are vulnerable. Man gets 4 years in prison for riot. January 6 photos show him with feet propped up on desk in Pelosi's office in Washington. An Arkansas man who propped his feet on a desk in then House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's office in a widely circulated photo from the U.S. Capitol riot was sentenced Wednesday to more than 4 years in prison. Richard Barnett became one of the faces of the January 6 riot by supporters of then-President Donald Trump, and U.S. District Judge Christopher Cooper said in announcing the sentence that Barnett seemed at times to enjoy the notoriety. All the folks who follow Bigo, that's his nickname, need to know that the actions of January 6 cannot be repeated without some serious repercussions, Cooper said, alluding the media attention and social media following Barnett attracted after the riot. The 54-month sentence for Barnett, a retired firefighter from from Gravette, Arkansas, comes after he was convicted at trial on 8 counts, including felony charges of civil disorder and obstruction of an official proceeding, in this case, a January 6, 2021 session of Congress, to certify Joe Biden's victory over Trump in the 2020 presidential election. The photos of Barnett lounging at a desk in Pelosi's office made him one of the most memorable figures from the riot. Barnett, age 63, testified that he was going with the flow and struck a pose after news photographers told him to act natural. Storm blasts Guam with 150-mile-an-hour winds. Typhoon flips vehicles and downs electrical lines, trees, and walls. A powerful typhoon smashed the U.S. territory of Guam and continued lashing the Pacific island with high winds and heavy rain Thursday, knocking down trees and walls and power lines, creating a powerful storm surge that threatened to wash out low-lying areas. The typhoon, the strongest to hit the territory of roughly 150,000 people since 2002, briefly made landfall on Wednesday as a Category 4 storm at Anderson Air Force Base on the northern tip of the island, according to National Weather Service meteorologist Patrick Dull. The storm strengthened to 150 miles per hour, with winds 150 miles per hour, the following morning, regaining its status as a super typhoon, according to the Weather Service. Mawar was forecast to intensify further. As it churned slowly over the island, the typhoon flipped cars, ripped branches from trees. At what felt like its peak in intensity Wednesday night, the winds screeched and howled like jets, flying overhead, and rainwater rushed into some homes. Videos posted on social media showed fallen trees, an overturned pickup truck, solar panels flying through the air, parts of a hotel's exterior wall crumbling to the ground, and exposing rebar and storm surge and waves crashing through the coastal reefs. All right, let's see what else we've got here going on in the paper here today. Let's take a quick stop here. What I'd like to do is read you the weather. I'm going to take a look at that right now. Then we'll look at some entertainment. This is for the Cedar Valley 5-day forecast. Today, mostly sunny, not as warm, at a high of 77 degrees. Tonight, it'll be chilly, good sleeping weather, a low of 46. Friday, sunny and beautiful, high 77, low of 50. Saturday, sunny and pleasant, high 81, low of 55. Sunday, plenty of sunshine, high 85, low 57. Monday, clouds and sunshine, high of 87 and a low of 60. Oh boy, what a great weekend it's going to be to get out there and enjoy yourself, maybe go to some picnics and other good things. All right, let's take a look here now, what to watch for Thursday. There is a new show, FUBAR, with Arnold Schwarzenegger, the bodybuilder, and this is going to be on Netflix. Arnold Schwarzenegger comes to series television in this show that tackles universal family dynamics set against a global backdrop of spies, action, and humor. He plays a CIA operative on the verge of retirement who discovers a family secret and is forced to go back into the field for one last job. So that looks like fun. And on Thursday, Judge Me Not on ALL, All Black, a new series. Judge Lynn Toler created, wrote, and executive produces this legal drama loosely based on her life. It follows Zema J. Johnson, an exceptionally bright young Black woman who struggles with mental health issues, a ludicrous family, and a volatile love life. And again, that's on All Black, A-L-L-B-L-K. Let's see, what else do we have here? We've got Ghost Hunters, and that's going to be on the Travel Channel at 8 p.m., also streams on Discovery This is the season's finale in Diocese of the Dead. TAPS, that's T-A-P-S, is called to Ogdensburg, New York, to investigate a large family home. Once a church, this imposing limestone manor is filled with terrifying entities that date back to its religious beginnings. Alongside Jason Sun, Austin Hawes, and guest investigator Dustin Paris, TAPS hopes to calm the family fears of being in their home. Wild West Chronicles, an INSP at 9 p.m., unable to apprehend the train-robbing Smith brothers, Sheriff Doc Shores calls the Pinkerton Detective Agency for assistance in the episode The Many Faces of Charles Seringo. The agency sends Charles, an undercover specialist known for his unorthodox methods of capturing criminals. And we can't leave this page without telling you about catching a classic on Turner Classic Movies, Spotlight, Weather in the Movies, Sweltering Skies. That's the theme here. On TCM, and it begins at 7 p.m. The first one will be The Seven-Year Itch, Billy Wilder's classical comedy in which Marilyn Monroe, as the girl, makes an already sweltering New York City summer even hotter for Tom Ewell's middle-aged, married, fantasy-prone character. A Street Car Named Desire, Oscar nominee Tennessee Williams, adaptation of his own Southern Gothic play set in hot and humid New Orleans, starring Best Actress winner Vivian Leigh, Best Actor nominee Marlon Brando, Best Supporting Actor winner Carl Malden, and Best Supporting Actress winner Kim Hunter. Also, Dog Day Afternoon, 1975, the Best Picture nominated true life crime drama led by Best Actor nominee Al Pacino. And then The Good Earth, a drama about Chinese farmers struggling through a drought and famine. This is a real classic. It's an oldie, but boy, it's a goodie. And the last one is Stray Dog, a Japanese film noir, co-written and directed by Akira Kurosawa, that takes place during a heat wave in post-war Tokyo and is led by frequent Kurosawa collaborator Toshirio Mifune. So, lots of good stuff to view over the weekend. All right, let's keep moving down here. We've read the weather. Let's take a look now at some other things going on here in the paper today. As we are rapidly running out of time, let's do this one right here. Wagner chief cites heavy losses. He estimates 20,000 of his men were killed in fight for Ukraine city. In Kyiv, Ukraine, the head of the Russian private army, Wagner, again broke with the Kremlin line on Ukraine, saying its goals of demilitarizing the country backfired, acknowledging Russian troops killed civilians and agreeing with Western estimates that he lost more than 20,000 men in the battle for Bakhmut. Forgive me if I mispronounce that. Some of these Ukrainian names are a little hard to pronounce. He figures his figures stood in stark contrast to Moscow's widely disputed claim that just over 6,000 of his troops were killed throughout the war as of January. By comparison, official Soviet troop losses in the 1979 through 1989 Afghanistan war, were 15,000. Ukraine hasn't said how many of its soldiers died since Russia's full-scale invasion began in February of 2022. White House officials said that Wednesday that comments were in line with their own estimates that Russian losses did accelerate. The White House estimated this month that Russian forces suffered 100,000 casualties, including 20,000 killed in fighting since December. White House National Security Council spokesman John Kirby said then that about half of those killed were Wagner forces. Analysts believe that many of those killed in the nine-month fight for Bakhmut were Russian convicts with little military training. He also highlighted that his forces and sacrifices, and on Saturday touted what he claimed was the capture of the city of Bakhmut. in an interview published late Tuesday with the Konstantin Doglov, a pro-Kremlin political strategist, went even further in his criticism, questioning some of the Russian President Vladimir Putin's rationale for the war. In invading Ukraine, Putin also cited the need to increase Russian security and prevent Ukraine from joining NATO. Since the war began, Ukraine applied to join NATO, and cross-border attacks into Russia itself have also increased. All right, well, that just about does it for the reading of the Courier here for Thursday, May 25th. I am your reader, Peter Welch, and you've been listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Information Services Network, for the blind and the disabled. I want to say thank you so much for listening today. Memorial weekend is rapidly approaching. Weather's going to be terrific. Get out there and enjoy the weekend, folks. Take care. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye now.